Great day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Banc of California quarterly earnings conference call. My name is Katina, and I'll be your coordinator for today. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. Later, we will facilitate a question-and-answer session. To pose a question at any time, please key star one on your touch-tone telephone. If at any time during the call you require assistance, please key star followed by zero, and a coordinator will be happy to assist you. I would now like to turn the presentation over to your host for today's call, Mr. John Grosvenor, General Counsel. Please proceed.
Thank you, operator. Good morning, everyone. I'm John Grosvenor, and let me be the first to welcome you to this morning's conference call to discuss Banc of California's results of operations for the quarterly and annual period ending December 31, 2013. With me on the call this morning will be our Chief Executive Officer, Stephen Sugarman, and our Chief Financial Officer, Ronald Nicholas. This morning's presentation is being recorded, and a copy of the recording will be available later today on the company's investor relations website. Now, before I turn it over to Stephen, I want to take a moment to remind everyone that our presentation today contains forward-looking statements which reflect our best view of the world and our businesses as we see them today. Those views can change as the world changes, so please interpret those statements in that light. Further information regarding reliance on our forward-looking statements is included in today's 8K filing and applies as well to our comments during today's call. The 8K covering our earnings announcement is also available on our investor relations website. Finally, we've reserved time at the end of the presentation to address questions concerning the announcement. So with those formalities concluded, it is my pleasure to introduce our Chief Executive Officer, Stephen Sugarman, and turn the call over to him.
Thank you, John. Welcome to everyone. This is Banc of California earnings call for the period ending December 31st, 2013. We issued a short presentation alongside our earnings release, which you can find on our investor relations website at bankofcal.com. You may find a worthwhile supplement for my comments this morning, as I'll reference the slides during the course of my remarks. 2013 was a year of significant transformation for Banc of California, and I'm very proud of our team and all they've accomplished this year. This was my first full year as CFO of the CEO of the holding company, and 2014 will be my first full year running the bank. During this period, we have taken focused steps towards achieving our mission of becoming California's bank. So far, we've accomplished a lot. I'm more optimistic about the value we're creating at the bank and excited about the future of Banc of California today. This is primarily due to the talented leaders I have surrounding me and working in positions throughout the bank. The change we've embarked on is not easy, and we've seen some bumps in the road, but the progress we've made over the past year is exceptional and a shared accomplishment of the broad group of professionals throughout the organization who have worked tirelessly and made sacrifice and performed very well. During the fourth quarter, we rewarded all of our employees by establishing an employee equity ownership plan that has resulted in each employee becoming an investor in the company. So this morning we have a little bit over 1,000 new owner employees interested in our financial results because each one of them is personally impacted by the price of our stock and the amount of the company's profits. I can tell you that now every meeting that I have at the bank is a shareholder meeting, and I think that's how it should be. Now, turning to the presentation and page two in particular, our key accomplishments in 2013 included the completion of our acquisition of the Private Bank of California, the acquisition of CS Financial, and the acquisition of the Palisades Group. Each of these transactions added significant strategic assets and capabilities to our organization. In addition, during the fourth quarter of 2013, we sold 8 branch locations that were non-core to our franchise, merged our banking subsidiaries into a single national bank regulated by the OCC, and implemented a conversion onto a new core banking technology system while changing our name to Bank of California. The ability of our team to accomplish multiple significant strategic objectives during the fourth quarter was a testament to their expertise, commitment, and capabilities. The results are meaningful. Bank of California finished 2013 with $3.6 billion in assets and over $1.5 billion in assets under advisory fee agreements with our RIA subsidiary, the Palisades Group. Bank of California is quickly becoming the largest bank headquartered in California, in Orange County, California. We're also the 10th largest bank headquartered in California as measured by loan portfolio size. Importantly, despite the significant acquisitions mentioned above, our growth in 2013 came primarily from organic sources, not acquisitions. In fact, approximately $1.3 billion of our $1.6 billion in deposit growth in 2013 was organic. This represents approximately 80% of our deposit growth. The trends on the loan side are similar, with only $500 million of our $1.8 billion in loan growth coming from acquisitions. This means that over 70% of our loan growth and 80% of our deposit growth came from sources other than our M&A activity. We saw similar success in the increases in our overall assets under advisement by our Palisades Group Registered Investment Advisor subsidiary, which grew its assets under advisement by over $1.6 billion. We believe that the ability of Bank of California to generate strong organic growth distinguishes our company in the marketplace. We also believe that this strong organic growth is a primary factor in Bank of California's ability to raise capital efficiently as it did in 2013. We raised approximately $150 million through issuances in 2013 to support our growth based on a total leverage ratio of 9 to 10%. We completed successful capital raises of non-cumulative, perpetual preferred, and common stock during the year. We were excited to welcome several new bank investors into our stock, including the recent direct placement to Patriot Financial Partners. Management and our board is very aware of the dilutive effects capital issuances can have, and therefore we are very focused on ensuring that these capital raises are used to finance compelling projects that meet our economic return hurdles and enhance the overall value for our common shareholders. We recognize that growth is not meaningful without profitability and increasing earnings power. We believe that 2013 was transformational on this front as well. Bank of California made significant improvements in its cost structure and ability to drive organizational efficiencies. We also made significant investments in technology and systems that will enable us to benefit from compelling economies of scale as we grow. Cost-cutting efforts are never easy, and it's important that costs are cut prudently and without introducing unnecessary risks to the business. We have and continue to focus on this approach. That said, the investments we've made in our platform are now enabling us to focus on cutting a number of expenses that we have been carrying by necessity. As we turn to slide 3, I want to take a moment to comment on something in which I take particular pride. In January, our election to become a financial holding company was approved by the Federal Reserve. Unlike an ordinary bank holding company, a financial holding company and its bank subsidiaries must satisfy strict regulatory criteria in order to be approved as a financial holding company, and the company must certify to each of these criteria. These requirements have three primary elements. First, our subsidiary bank must be both well-capitalized and well-managed. Second, the parent company must also be both well-capitalized and well-managed. And third, the bank must satisfactorily fulfill its CRA and community obligations. Since our transition from being a savings and loan holding company to becoming a bank holding company occurred a little more than a year ago, it's personally very satisfying to me that we were able in such a short period of time since then to join the ranks of the strong, stable, and well-run financial holding companies. Although we have no current plans to avail ourselves of the expanded authority available to financial holding companies, it's consistent with our strategic objectives to enable us to capitalize on opportunities to launch and acquire complementary businesses. It should also provide all our investors greater comfort and transparency as to the quality of our management, sufficiency of our capital, and soundness of our organization. Next, you can see the significant cost cutting we have engaged in since the end of the third quarter of 2013. The company has historically carried a separate management team at the bank and the holding company for the past several years, during which time we have had multiple subsidiary banks. However, since the completion of the merger of our banking subsidiaries on October 11, 2013, we have eliminated virtually every overlapping executive position. The duplicative officer positions that we have consolidated since the end of the third quarter of 2013 include the offices of CEO and President, Chief Financial Officer, Chief Lending Officer, Chief Credit Officer, and Chief Administrative Officer of the bank. Importantly, each of these positions has been filled by an existing member of our leadership with a deep knowledge of our company and a strong track record of delivering results for us. This management team is willing and able to make the hard decisions to enhance shareholder value. That said, we're also proud that some of our departing colleagues are leaving to pursue very exciting new opportunities for them in their careers. One such leader is Lonnie Robinson. I want to thank Lonnie for his time with Bank of California and congratulate him on his new job as CFO at Heritage Oaks. He helped to lead the integration of our banks together and provide leadership to our bank. While we'll miss Lonnie, Heritage Oaks has made a commendable decision and will benefit from Lonnie's steady hand. The consolidation of our management team is consistent with our approach of managing the consolidated organization as one company in order to maximize efficiencies and synergies we get from our diverse offerings. We have focused on a simplified organizational structure that will save us money and better reflect the holistic enterprise approach we take towards our businesses. In that spirit, the company's board of directors has also taken steps to harmonize membership on the boards of both the company and the bank in order to improve corporate governance and risk oversight and to reduce overall costs. And we expect to complete that process upon the election of directors at this year's annual meeting of shareholders scheduled for May 15th. Our successes are starting to beget further success. For instance, we recently announced the addition of Tom Senske and his team of eight professionals to launch our new multifamily lending team. Tom joins us from one of our peer banks where he had a formidable record of originations and compelling financial results. Tom and his team began at Bank of California during the fourth quarter, and they funded their first series of loans during February. We are excited about the pipeline they've already developed and the diversification and risk-adjusted returns on capital their multifamily loans will bring to our balance sheet. Similarly, we're thrilled to have completed a purchase and assumption transaction with Renovation Ready during the first quarter. This transaction was many months in the making, and while a small transaction in terms of cost, we believe it is strategically important to us because Renovation Ready provides specialized loan administration services for FHA and other renovation loans. This new business line already boasts more than 30 clients and enjoys small operating profits. For us, it provides Bank of California key expertise relating to fund control and will enable us to expand our average gain on sale margins by introducing FHA 203K products to our retail clients. We believe that our value proposition as the bank of choice for top originators of both loans and deposits is gaining traction, and we hope to be able to announce additional team liftouts in the coming weeks. While we manage our business on a consolidated basis, investors have requested the management provide updates as to certain merger and acquisition-related activities. On slide four, we attempt to do this. For Bank of California NA, we are using publicly available information from our call report. And for the acquisition of the Palisades Group, we have, where appropriate, used fourth quarter results and annualized them to provide a pro forma for full year run rates. For investors seeking to isolate the bank's performance from the rest of the company and its operating results from holding company expenses, including expenses relating to our debt, slide four should be informative. For instance, you will see that pre-tax, pre-provision earnings at the bank grew by 59% year-over-year in 2013. This compared to 32% year-over-year growth at the consolidated company. The Palisades Group finished 2013 with just north of $1.6 billion of assets under advisement and was profitable in 2013. For more information relating to their business and the status of the Palisades Group, I would direct you to the 8K that we filed on March 6, 2014. In that presentation, we disclosed the mortgage balances under advisement for the Palisades Group now exceed $2.4 billion, and the Palisades Group is currently in the process of transferring approximately $3 billion of additional loans onto their platform. We are excited with the significant growth in our RIA business and assets under advisement in 2014. As you can see on slide four, the Palisades Group's business model requires less equity than our banking activities, and therefore capital requirements relating to scale are less. With respect to expenses, the acquisitions of CS Financial and the Palisades Group added almost $5 million to the company's fourth quarter expenses. These are not new expenses, but just the result of consolidating those companies' existing operations with our financials post-acquisition. Also, for future periods, investors should note that for CS Financial, the operating costs in the fourth quarter only reflect the partial quarter that occurred subsequent to the company's acquisition of that business. Turning to slide five, you can see the effects of the holding company expenses on our consolidated profitability. This is one of the factors that led to the decision to eliminate headcount through the consolidation of overlapping executive positions at the holding company and the bank. The levered capital structure at the holding company is the most significant holding company expense. There are several non-recurring items that impacted our numbers during 2013. But two items stand out for some particular attention. You can find these on slide six. First, taxes. I was going to leave this item to Ron Nicholas to explain, but he won the coin flip. So I'll tell you my best at how to explain a 99% effective tax rate in 2013. At the highest level, it's due to some complex factors, but the main driver is that we increased our valuation allowance by $8.9 million during the course of 2013, and it finished at $17.3 million. That valuation allowance is now 100% of the DTA that existed as of December 31st, 2013. Therefore, the effective tax rate on future earnings should be reduced as the deferred tax allowance is used. The second item on this page involves the reclassification of several hundred million dollars of jumbo mortgages on our balance sheet from held for investment to held for sale. For existing loans reclassified, this does not affect income, as the ALLL allotted to these loans, which were initially classified as held for investment, is used to reduce the cost basis for these loans once moved to held for sale status. This impacted approximately $150 million of loans. During the fourth quarter, there were another approximately $350 million in loans that were classified as held for sale in the fourth quarter that under our prior policy and approach would have been classified as held for investment. These loans and similarly classified loans in the future that are new originations will be held at the lesser of cost and market value and not subject to a separate ALLL reserve. Now, turning to slide 7, we continue to be focused on targeted expense reductions and increased efficiency. With respect to cost cutting, we previously discussed the progress we have made eliminating excess overhead by consolidating executive positions. We have also been focused on reducing the costs associated with our mortgage operations based on the more difficult market conditions and lower industry-wide volumes we have seen in relation to the single-family residential mortgage business. Since December 1st, 2013, we have terminated over 250 positions and closed 8 loan production offices in the residential mortgage lending operation. These cost reductions will not be fully realized until the second quarter of 2014. Unfortunately, the cost cuts come on the heels of the significant growth in our mortgage banking operations, which saw costs increasing into the deteriorating market conditions during the second half of 2013. So the cuts will first serve to eliminate the additional costs related to the growth of the bank's fixed expenses during the first half of the fourth quarter compared to the third quarter. We believe our organization is being right-sized to current market conditions, and we continue to evaluate market conditions to ensure that the size of our mortgage lending operations remains consistent with our expected origination volumes. We also continue to focus on technological improvements that we expect to result in further efficiency gains. This means automation, analytics, and systems. The four most important software and systems upgrades we are focused on for 2014 are the implementation of an automated commission system, servicing software for mortgage loans serviced by third parties, a consolidated loan pipeline tracking and reporting system, and the consolidation of our general ledgers. Now, turning to slide 8, it's important to note that we finished 2013 with over $3 billion in total loans. We were encouraged by seeing over 50% loan growth during the year in our commercial loan book, which finished at over $1 billion of loans. We seek to see commercial loan growth exceed residential loan growth in 2014 as well. Finally, before I turn it over to Ron to discuss our results in more detail, we have provided our loan activity by product type for the fourth quarter and full year 2013. As you can see on slide 9, our non-residential originations continue to grow, and we are seeing significant traction in several areas. Notably, our new originations in the fourth quarter for C&I loans reached $60 million, and for CRE reached $100 million in the fourth quarter alone. As you can see from this chart, our multifamily originations were lagging. This is a trend that we expect to see reversed with the addition of our new multifamily lending team. Overall, our $220 million of non-residential originations in the fourth quarter alone was a very positive step and is in line with our strategic goals. I'll now turn it over to our CFO, Ron Nicholas, to provide a more detailed update with regard to today's earnings report.
Thanks, Steve, and good morning, everyone. As customary, I will be directing my comments to the financial statements included with the release provided earlier this morning, focusing primarily on the comparison to the third quarter of 2013, starting with the income statement. Note, these figures through December 31st include the impact of the deposit branch sale and bank consolidation completed in October, as well as the full quarter impact of the acquisition of the Palisades Group in September and the partial quarter impact of the acquisition of CS Financial in November. I will provide some insight as to the impact of these activities to our deposits and balance sheet where applicable. For the fourth quarter 2013, the company reported net income of $3.3 million and net income available to common shareholders of $2.4 million or 12 cents per share on just over 20 million average shares outstanding. This compares to a net loss of $9.5 million to common shareholders for the third quarter of 2013 and a net loss of $3.5 million to the common shareholders for the fourth quarter of 2012, as highlighted in our release. The fourth quarter results included a net gain of $12.1 million from the sale of our eight legacy branch locations and deposits in October, partially offset by one-time expenses the company incurred related to the acquisitions, bank mergers, and divestitures, as well as the margin squeeze in the mortgage business. I will highlight these particular areas as we review the financial results. Total revenues before loan loss provision were $67.8 million for the quarter compared to $45.2 million for the third quarter. Excluding the fourth quarter gain of $12.1 million resulting from the deposit branch sale, total revenues were up $10.6 million. Taking a closer look at the components of that, net interest income of $33.3 million was higher by $6.4 million, driven principally by the purchase of $500 million of seasoned SFR loans toward the end of the third quarter. As anticipated, our net interest margin rebounded to 3.9% in the quarter after dropping to 3.25% in the third quarter, reflecting the release of the excess liquidity subsequent to the deposit branch sale, the seasoned SFR portfolio acquired towards the end of the quarter, and the overall growth in our earning assets. Non-interest income of $33.5 million increased by $4.2 million, excluding the branch gain, reflecting the contributions of the recent acquisitions of the Palisades Group and CS Financial, as well as a realized gain of $2.6 million from the sale of a credit-impaired loan acquired through the acquisition of PBOC. In addition, the company sold $150 million of jumbo loans compared to $108 during the quarter, during third quarter, sold at a similar price for the first 9 months of 2013, as the company has continued to acquire and sell jumbo loans, mortgage loans, to both manage risk and economic returns. As a result, during the quarter, the company reclassified approximately $500 million of its jumbo mortgages, as Steve highlighted earlier, to held for sale from held for investment, approximately $150 million of which was transferred and previously classified as HFI in the third quarter of 2013. The company also experienced lower mortgage banking income of $15 million versus $16 million in the third quarter, partially offset by a higher MSR valuation and higher servicing fee income. The company experienced softer gain on sale margins by roughly 25 basis points compared to the third quarter. Our total SFR mortgage originations increased to $910 million for the quarter, from $764 million in the third quarter. This breaks down with mortgage banking conforming loans up slightly at $552 million versus $521 million in the third quarter, while non-conforming jumbo loans increased to $358 million from $243 million in the prior quarter. For the quarter, the company provisioned $1.8 million for loan and lease losses, which covered net charge-offs of $650,000. Overall, the ALLL was lower by $325,000 at $18.8 million when compared to the third quarter, but the fourth quarter included the transfer of $1.4 million of allowance with the aforementioned $150 million of residential mortgage loans transferred to held-for-sale status during the quarter. The ALLL to originated loans ended the quarter at 1.45%, compared to 1.39% in the prior quarter. Additionally, loans originated and acquired and attributable to the ALLL, including their discount, were at 1.63% compared with 1.56% in the prior quarter. These loans are fair valued at time of acquisition, specific to our Beach, Gateway, and Private Bank transactions. The company believes, including the discount, provides for a better measurement of the credit loss coverage ratio as the discount is in the first loss position. The ratio was calculated by dividing the sum of the ALLL and discounts by the carrying value of the loans as of December 31st, 2013. This measurement does exclude the seasoned SFR loan pools purchased at a substantial discount. That discount is accreted into income, and if the future loss projection exceeds that discount, the company will then begin to add to the ALLL through the more traditional loan loss provisioning approach. More on asset quality in a moment. Turning to expense, non-interest expense of $57.2 million increased $5 million from the third quarter, reflecting the full quarter impact of the Palisades Group acquired in September and the acquisition of CS in November. Combined, these acquisitions added approximately $5 million in higher operating expenses for the quarter. Higher overall mortgage originations also contributed to higher operating expense in the form of higher commission. Of the increase in salaries and benefits of $6 million, $3 million is related to the increase in commission expense, with the remaining difference related to the combination of the CS and TPG acquisitions, as well as a year-end annual bonus true-up. Overall, the company headcount grew slightly to 1,384 as of December 31st, compared to 1,318 as of September 30th. Of that 66 headcount increase, the acquisition of CS Financial added 58. The continued expansion of the mortgage banking operation grew by 39 to 908, and the remaining company added 19 FTEs, offset by a reduction of 50 associated with the branch sale transaction. Higher occupancy and equipment costs are related to the core growth of the company. The company also incurred higher one-time costs in the third quarter, reflecting the lower operating expense on a linked quarter, the other operating expense on a linked quarter comparison. As Steve talked about earlier, the company incurred a tax expense of $5.5 million for the quarter, adjusting for the year-to-date tax provision, and added to its valuation allowance, reducing the realizable portion of the deferred tax asset to zero. The year-to-date tax rate reflects both the effect of tax planning strategies completed during the year and the company's decision to fully reserve its net DTA. The company currently does not consider the potential of future earnings in recognition of its deferred tax asset. To the extent the company realizes future earnings, the effect of potentially reversing its $17 million deferred tax asset valuation allowance will be realized through a reduction of its effective tax rate. Turning to the balance sheet, the company finished the quarter at over $3.6 billion in assets compared to $3.7 billion in assets at the end of the third quarter after releasing over $300 million in excess liquidity related to the aforementioned deposit branch sale. Organic loan growth during the quarter added approximately $200 million net of payoffs as total loans grew to over $3.1 billion. The bulk of the loan growth was the SFR loan portfolio, which grew by approximately $110 million, fueled largely by the higher non-conforming jumbo originations, but we also saw growth in the CRE and C&I categories of $60 and $40 million respectively, as Steve highlighted. Additionally, the company reclassified approximately $500 million in non-conforming jumbo loans during the quarter to a held-for-sale status, reflecting the organization's continued strategy towards loan diversification. Keep in mind, of the $500 million now held for sale, approximately $150 million was held for investment in the third quarter, with the remaining fourth quarter new originations. On the liability side, as anticipated, deposits dropped by $340 million from the prior quarter, reflecting the sale of $464 million in branch deposits, which was partially offset by nearly $100 million in organic deposit growth, or 18% on an annual basis. Excluding the loans held for sale, the loan-to-deposit ratio post the sale was at 84%. The company continues to grow its retail deposit base to fund loan growth and utilize additional sources of liquidity to fund its mortgage loan production ahead of its loan sales. Equity was up during the quarter at $325 million compared to $303 million of the prior quarter, reflecting the issuance of $20 million of common equity during the quarter through a private placement transaction. The company's tangible book value fell to $10.06 per share from $10.40 at September 30th, primarily driven by the acquisition of CS Financial and the full reserve of its net DTA. The company and the bank both remain well capitalized at the end of the quarter for each of its key risk-based and leverage ratios. Asset quality continues to improve, with overall delinquency dollars essentially flat quarter to quarter and delinquency rates down. Although non-accrual loans increased, it was not a surprise as almost the entire amount of the increase was related to the seasoned SFR mortgage purchase pools, which is not unexpected given the nature of these pools. The credit quality profile of these types of loans, bought at a very attractive economic discount, will not be as stellar as those newly originated at par. As previously mentioned, net charge-offs for the quarter were $650,000, and the company had no REO as of December 31st, 2014. With that, I'll turn it back over to Steve.
Thanks, Ron. This completes our prepared remarks today. With that, operator, we'd like to open up the call for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to withdraw your question, please press star 2. Please press star 1 to begin. Your first question comes from the line of Brett Rebiton, representing Stern Agee. Please proceed.
Hi, guys. Good morning. Wanted to first, I guess, start off with the usual question on the expenses. And just, I guess, first, is there anything besides, I think you mentioned $5 million, were there any other non-recurring things that affected the fourth quarter in terms of the initiatives you've had in place? And with the growth or the expenses in 1Q14 for CS Financial and the other new acquisitions, can you give us maybe a little better feel for what the run rate might be with expenses on a go-forward basis?
Hey, thanks for the question, Brett. The $5 million number mentioned was the incremental expense approximation for the two acquisitions, the Palisades Group and CS Financial. I'm not sure that I'd characterize those expenses as non-recurring or one-time. However, they do also happen to approximate the increase in expenses over the course of kind of just a quarter-over-quarter look. There were a number of non-recurring and one-time revenue items and expense items relating to the two acquisitions, the branch disposition, our platform initiative, and some of the cost cutting. What we could do is if you have kind of specific kind of breakdowns you'd like to see, we'll figure out how to include that. We're looking at doing an investor conference. We'd look at including it or including it in our investor presentation going forward. So we'd welcome you to kind of help us understand how you'd like to see it. But you know, just at a high level, the Palisades Group and CS consolidation of their financials kind of represented that $5 million number.
And just, Brent, to put it just a little bit of a finer point on that last comment by Steve, that $5 million attributable to the two acquisitions, just keep in mind that the CS acquisition only represents roughly about two-thirds of their what I would characterize as their normally quarterly run rate. So I would expect that number to be probably around 20% higher for on a full quarter basis.
Okay. Maybe we can follow up some more about expenses offline. Can I move maybe to capital? And I know I've given you guys a lot of grief over the past year or two on just ratios, but you've got your total risk-based capital ratio at 12.5 now. And just with all the people you're adding to produce loans, do the capital ratios from here build a little more, or you know, is this sort of the level that you're comfortable with in terms of the various ratios?
Look, we're the capital ratios are going to be dependent a lot on our rate of growth, because one of the primary drivers is the pace of growth. One of the things that we discussed in our earnings today was the transfer of certain parts of our loan portfolio into a held for into a new policy, which results in new originations being placed into a held for sale category. You know, that's part of our view on one example of ways that we believe that profitability can be enhanced, but also these ratios can be managed without compromising profitability. So there are steps like that are being taken. We don't see we feel comfortable with where we are on a capital perspective. You know, that being said, we also provide guidance that our optimal size and our strategic plan is a size that's materially bigger than we are today. And therefore, if there are opportunities to grow where we have very compelling use of proceeds, we'll take on those opportunities, and that could require capital in the future, but there's no kind of current issues on our capital front, and that's kind of underscored by kind of our new regulatory status as a financial holding company.
Okay, and then just one last one, and I'll hop off. The other thing I was just curious about was just the thinking about what you're doing in the mortgage banking operation. Can you maybe, I guess first, I didn't catch the number if you gave it, what you actually sold in the quarter. I know you said the gain on sale margin was down a little bit, but if I understand correctly, it sounds like you're basically saying you're going to increase somewhat substantially the amount you're going to sell in the next few quarters, but you're not going to have the expenses from a portion of that operation given what you've done with a few folks there. Can you, I guess, first, just give me the number for the actual loans sold in 4Q.
Yeah, let me just I'll turn it over to Ron in a second. But you know, one of the things I want to emphasize is that when we manage our business, we're doing it kind of on a consolidated basis. So some parts of your question are kind of driven a little bit unique here, but I want to make sure that you're not confused. We have certain parts of our mortgage operations which are done on kind of a flow basis, where we sell the production to Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, or others. And then we have other parts of our mortgage banking activities that are underwritten to the credit criteria that basically we've developed and have had prior to the fourth quarter historically been held for investment and sat on our portfolio. So the new accounting policy relating to held for sale is something that only impacts that second category of loans that are not kind of originated typically on a flow basis. And so that that category of loans, you know, has a separate underwriting team, separate kind of a lot of differences in how that loan gets originated from a cost standpoint than loans that are in the conforming flow business that, we break out on slides 8 and 9. So my comments around headcount reductions are which we cited were over 250 fewer terminations since December 1st. Those were related mostly to the origination and sale of the conforming flow mortgages. And so the volumes that you're seeing from the jumbo non-flow, it's kind of an apples to oranges. So I just want to help you understand that the volumes, the growth or shrinkage of volumes are different for those for those piece of operations at different points in time. Now, when we look at it, we believe we have a nice comprehensive business where, you know, these provide diversification and the actual underlying operations collectively supports both of these businesses. And so we don't break it down exactly how we're talking about it when as we manage the business. But I just want to make sure that you're not confusing a reduction in originations in the conforming business with anything to do with this accounting policy change that, we made in the fourth quarter. With that, Ron, if you have
Sure. So Brett, we sold roughly a little over $700 million in total residential mortgages, and approximately $150 million of that was the jumbo non-conforming piece, and roughly north of $560 million. Was the mortgage banking or the conforming piece? Actually, I take it back. That number was closer to $600 million on the mortgage banking piece. So all told, we sold roughly about $750 million in total during the quarter.
Okay, great. Thanks for all the color.
Thanks, Brett.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Andrew Liesch, representing Sandler O'Neill and Partners. Please proceed.
Morning, guys. Just kind of want to go back to the expense question here for a second. So we're just looking at it differently, like on an average asset basis. The expenses have been running north of 6% this year. Is that like a good level for us to forecast and continue, or like what level do you think?
I don't think
percentage.
I'm not sure that we'd view an expense to average asset as relevant for our business, given the high degree of variable expense on parts of our business relating to assets under advisement that don't hit the asset level from Alphage Group, and also related to held for sale loans, which, you know, if you look at page 8, you'll see that our kind of conforming flow mortgage banking business uses about 6% of our balance sheet as of the end of 2013, which means on an average asset basis, it's pretty low. That being said, the expense structure is based mostly on volume of originations, and so I'm not sure you could just take a expense to average asset ratio and apply it over market cycles and have it be standard at all.
Okay, and then Ron, can you give some more clarification on why it's not unsurprising for non-accrual loans to rise in a seasoned mortgage portfolio? If you bought these portfolios at a discount and they perform worse than expected, then I would assume non-performers would rise. So I'm just kind of curious, like, why it's not unexpected.
Well, I guess I would just clarify that comment to suggest that They are a little bit more volatile type of performing assets. They typically do go delinquent, you know, by a month or two. They bounce back and forth.
I'd add that the actual performance of these loans during the fourth quarter met or exceeded our expectations at the time we bought it. So if you look at it on a pool basis, within a pool, sometimes you receive a loan that may be on non-accrual status, but you know, the portfolios as a whole have performed very well, and therefore the elevated characteristics like this are things that were priced in as we bought in with our expectations at the time.
So would it be not unsurprising to see another increase?
Well, he's not saying that these increased apples to apples, same loan to same loan. What he's saying is that we closed the purchase of a percentage of over $500 million of these at the end of the third quarter. And so the steady state percentage of that pool that you'd expect to see have some non-accrual elements is higher than some other parts of our portfolio. So it's the change of mix and composition of our portfolio and the growth of the portfolio that makes the notional number of non-accruals higher. It's not that loans that weren't on accrual went on accrual and spiked up just without any growth.
Yeah, that's correct. And also during the quarter, the company directed a servicing transfer for that pool, that fairly large and substantial pool. And that also typically what you see is a little bit of a spike in some of the credit profile numbers as a result of that. Usually that spike, though, is a temporary and interim temporary type of phenomena, and we see it return back to normalcy. So, but again, think of these loans, as Steve indicated, it's the overall economic performance on a pool basis that we look at less differently than newly minted loans, again, originated at par.
Just to follow up, we discussed on, I believe, our second quarter conference call that we went through the same process on a seasoned loan pool on a servicing transfer and saw a spike in that portfolio and the later subsided, you know, as we thought was expected. But the numbers here are just largely growing because the size of the portfolio grew, not because loans that already existed on the portfolio changed to the negative in terms of its characteristics.
That's right.
Okay. Thanks for taking my question.
Thanks, Andrew.
Your next question comes from the line of Kevin Reynolds representing Wunderlich Securities. Please proceed.
All right, thank you. Good morning, Steve. How are you doing?
Good. Hey, Kevin.
A couple of questions here, and I'm going to sort of try to attack the expense item a little bit differently. I think you all said that, and I've got a few questions to follow up on that, but I think you all said that with Palisades and CS being about $5 million of the increase sequentially in the quarter, and I believe mortgage commissions were about, you know, half of the $6 million increase in salaries expense. So just kind of, if you took those numbers just to simplify the matter and then went back to last quarter where I think you had identified $6 million in non-recurring items of a variety of sorts, it looks like there was still another $3 to $4 million or something in that ballpark of sequential increase in expenses. So I was trying to figure out if you could talk about what might have caused that. And then I guess just kind of a conceptual question along those lines of, if we can identify $6 million in one-timers last quarter, is there some reason why we can't identify similar explicit expenses associated with conversions and whatnot, because there was a lot of that activity going on this quarter, to back out of the expenses to get to more of a true run rate and maybe the offset to that one-time gain on the branch sale in the quarter? And that's my first question.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the question. If you remember, we have previously given guidance on the last quarterly call and on an interim update call that we expected the total one-time cost on the second half or the total one-time cost around our platform initiative to be, I believe we cited it at $10 to $12 million, and that about half of that was in the third quarter, and the preponderance of that would be on the second half of the year. And so your numbers are very consistent with the guidance we've given. The only hesitation is that even on the platform costs that were one-time costs, you also have benefits in the numbers for the third quarter relating to the branch sale. and you have other costs relating to these M&A transactions. And so I guess the question is, where do you summarize these to be? Your estimation of kind of non-recurring or one-time expenses and approach to thinking about that, I think, is fairly consistent with the guidance we've previously given around the expectations for one-time costs in the fourth quarter. Some of these things also have one-time benefits, so we're just a little bit hesitant to start digging into one-time costs without also digging into one-time benefits, and then it gets to be a pretty blurred story. Do you have anything to add, Ron?
No, I think you covered it pretty well there, Steve. There was some spillage into the fourth quarter on the one-time costs. We had roughly a couple million dollars on that so that number was down a little bit from the on a linked quarter basis from, I think we identified $5 or $6 million in the third quarter. But again, the higher commission expense related to the higher mortgage originations and the true up of the bonus in the fourth quarter, that was a couple $3 million on a combined basis, and then the bank was up another $1 million. So just to add a little finer point, there are a lot of moving parts, as Steve indicated. There's one-time benefits associated with that. Some of the economics that we'll see come about as a result of the higher originations won't be realized on the jumbo side, at least until the first quarter. But that basically is what gives rise to the $5 million in summary.
Okay, and I guess to sort of move beyond that a little bit, I guess what I'm struggling with is, in your presentation accompanying the press release here, you've identified specifically operating efficiencies designed to generate roughly $12 million or so annually in savings, and there's, I'm sure, other things behind the scenes that will be ongoing in nature, maybe not as direct or explicit. But it seems to me that number's not nearly enough to get to an expense run rate that ultimately with this, with the revenue that you're putting up this quarter, annualized and projecting even some growth in there to move the EPS needle meaningfully higher. And so I guess I want to ask a question that is, if you step back and look at your organization today, very different than when it began, from 30,000 feet, and then look out into the future, what do you think down the line, longer term, what is Bank of California, what does it look like, asset size, what kind of business mix is it going to be, and what is the profitability, the ROA, after tax, that you have to generate to say we're doing a pretty good job here that should be rewarded with a higher price in the market? And then secondly, as you go down that path, does it trouble you that we're spending so much time talking about mortgage origination, the decline in volumes, the expenses, and what has to be done to something that doesn't really add to most investors' view of franchise value?
Well, I appreciate the question. I think that our goal of what we're doing here is similar to the goal that we've set out for the last kind of 3 years I believe clearly and consistently, which our first target is that our banking operations should be at $5 billion in Southern California with minimum scale in each MSA that we're in. That our balance sheet we target to be balanced across five different origination categories to be a full-service bank, which is residential, C&I, commercial real estate, multifamily, and specialties, and that we also seek to have complementary financial services businesses that are profitable and add to the profitability of the bank and vice versa, such as the Palisades Group. So, when we think about that, we believe that there's some pretty standard metrics for what a profitable commercial bank that is $5 billion in size will generate. The target on size is kind of pretty well laid out for kind of what our near-term focus is. And the profitability metrics for that piece, that operating piece, are, from your perspective, are probably pretty well understood. That being said, when you look at strong franchises of of full-service banks here in California, we believe that lending against real estate and residential real estate is an important component of that. And if you look at peers that we look at that we believe are kind of, you know, some of the more valuable banking franchises, we believe that, you know, a portion of the balance sheet is to support a private mortgage banking operation which serves the high net worth needs of their clients. And so all the banks in Southern California that are the standard bearers in terms of valuation and value to the shareholders that we look at have an important complementary part from residential lending that's consolidated with their ability to be a full-service bank to their depositors. So I'm not sure which kind of larger peer you'd cite where that's not as true. But that being said, we also think that there's enhanced profitability in our business model from the complementary businesses that we're in that don't track to an asset-based return because you know, if we had a bank that had $5 billion of assets within the bank, you know, we would also like to have our registered investment advisor gaining fees from assets under advisement of $5 billion plus also. And that's something that you don't have the same capital reserve requirements against, so that would be additive to the economics of that you could achieve typically from just a standalone banking enterprise. And we also believe that if you have the systems and infrastructure where you have a core business, which is the private mortgage banking, that you should also be serving the communities you're in with homeowners' needs who need conforming loans and other real estate loans. And so I'm not sure that we would buy into a fact that you should serve only the rich in the community or that you shouldn't you know, have a business where you can also sell some of the production to Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. So, you know, we intend to build a bank right now focused in Southern California that serves the needs of private businesses, entrepreneurs, and homeowners. I think that's a pretty clear vision. I think that it's a pretty valuable vision for our shareholders. But I do think that if you have a stated goal of believing that you need to get to $5 billion of scale and you want to have five different business lines, you need to build your teams to be able to originate appropriately, which I think we have, and you need to be able to build your asset management capabilities to be able to manage the diverse loans, and you have to build it so you're prudent on your growth. And, you know, maybe there are other ways to do it, but, you know, I think if you look at our credit metrics and our asset quality and how we've been growing it, you know, I'm pretty proud that we finished the second quarter in a row, I believe, with zero OREO. We have very strong credit metrics. Our production numbers are unequaled in this region. As far as high-quality originations, we're not generating huge goodwill to grow it. I mean, a lot of the peers who are growing are taking on goodwill at rates that we don't believe kind of is attractive for our model. So to the extent that we're not generating goodwill, but we're taking on some growth expenses that are a fraction of the goodwill it would take to acquire a bank, we think that's a good thing.
Okay. Thanks a lot for taking my questions.
Sure.
Your next question comes from the line of Don Worthington, representing Raymond James. Please proceed.
Good morning, Steve and Ron.
Good morning, Don.
A couple, I guess, follow-ups. In terms of the headcount, where are you today rather than or as opposed to the end of the year? And I guess I'm trying to figure out how much of the mortgage banking reductions were December versus after the first of the year?
A majority of them were after the first of the year.
Okay. And then I noticed FHLB advances were up about $225 million quarter over quarter. Was that just for liquidity adjustment purposes, or did you do some match funding on a longer-term basis for interest rate risk?
No, Don, that was for liquidity. So as we, to my earlier comments, with the growth that we saw on our loans held for sale portfolio, we saw a pretty sizable uptick on our SFR jumbo piece. We took down some additional liquidity to fund that for that interim period until the sales catch up with the origination. So when you see an origination spike, as we saw here in the fourth quarter versus the third quarter, obviously you pre-fund that with additional with your additional liquidity until your sales catch up. So it's really no more than that. There's more to it, obviously, as it relates to the branch sale as well. But effectively, it was the increase in our loan growth and volume related to the held for sale portfolios.
Okay, great. And then on the specialty loans, what types of loans are those typically?
I mean, to give you an example, we have an equipment lease business that we launched a couple years ago that has been continually growing and ramping up its growth. That's an attractive business for us. We also have a number of other loans, either that were acquired in some of the acquisitions or just don't fit cleanly into these categories. Ron, do you want to expand on that?
With respect to the specialty, I think the bulk of it is the equipment leasing, small ticket equipment, everything from copiers to factory machinery and that. I think there's some other smaller consumer type loan ticket items that are also included in that, Don.
Okay. And then is there any overlap between BANC's assets and the Palisades Group? The reason I'm asking is I think you were actually a customer of Palisades before they became part of the company. So was there any overlap in that $1.6 billion being BANC loans?
Yes. The Palisades Group manages the season loans on our behalf or advises on them. And so the preponderance of our season loans are within that number. Importantly, over the back half of last year and now into this year, their growth that we discussed is coming from third-party fee sources. That may also be a little bit of confusion that could be generated from looking at the call reports versus Y-9s where there are eliminations that occur relating to those fees.
Okay. Now, I guess my last question, what's the balance of TDRs that are not included in non-performers?
You know what, Don? I'll have to get back to you on that. I've got the number.
Very low.
But it is a very low number. We'll have to follow up with you on that.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Jackie Chimera, representing KBW. Please proceed.
Hi. Good morning, everyone.
Hey, Jackie.
I wanted to make sure that I'm understanding the jumbo transfer that happened in the quarter, the $500 million. So I understand the component about the $150 that's associated with the $1.4 million reduction in the reserve. So that $150 came from held for investment, but the other $350 component, was that ever included in the September 30th end-of-period loan balance in held for investment, or was that just internal generation in the quarter that was transferred before quarter end?
Yeah, that was a function of our new originations during the fourth quarter. And in the presentation that we gave you on page 9, you could look at the total amount of new originations in the fourth quarter of around $380 million. So a preponderance of that is now going to held for sale.
Okay. So if I'm looking to calculate a growth rate on the originated portfolio, I would only subtract $150 million and not $500 million for the change in what happened in the quarter.
That's right, and I think we've done that for you on the slide 9 that we provided, which shows fourth quarter originations on the jumbo at 380.
Okay, there it is right there. Okay, thank you. Looking at, just kind of centering in on the other fees, if I take out the $12.1 million for the gain from the branch divestiture and then the $2.6 million on the PCI loan from private bank, I'm getting a run rate of about $4.5 million in fees. Does that sound pretty standard go forward, given the addition of Palisades and CS Financial?
Other income.
Jackie, I'm sorry, I was distracted. Would you mind asking that question one more time, please?
Sure. So if I take the other fee income that started out at the $19.2 million, and I take out
yes.
the $12.1 million from the branch divestiture, and then I take out the $2.6 million from the PCI loan sale that you had from the private bank acquisition, that gives me around $4.5 million as a run rate in other fees. Is there anything else included in there that would be on a non-go-forward basis, or is that a pretty good run rate, understanding that we're still missing an additional month of CS Financial in that number?
Yeah, that's exactly right, the math you just described there. That would be a pretty good run rate number for the quarter.
Now, does all of the income that was discussed in the slide deck, does that all hit in the other income, or is some of that also flowing into the NIM in some way?
Jackie, I just want to go back to that prior quarter. There was one other non-recurring item that I don't know if in your analysis there you just recapped to me, included, and that was a $2.6 million one-time recovery related to a credit that was previously fair valued at acquisition that we ended up recovering.
Yes, that was what you had mentioned from the Private Bank of California transaction?
That is correct, yes.
Okay, yeah, that was included as well.
Okay, terrific. Your second question?
You know what? I lost my train of thought, so it must not have been important. Going back, not touching too much on expenses, but just making sure that I understand. I know we've already discussed those quite a bit. But the $12.1 million gain from the branch divestiture that took place in early October, you had mentioned with expenses and quantifying that additional $5 to $6 million remaining from the original $10 to $12 million guidance that you had given. Would any of that have been associated with the branch divestiture? Because I know you had said that there were benefits attached to those one-time charges, but would any of that benefit be related to the $12.1 million, or is that completely separate?
The branch divestiture caused a couple things. One is the net interest margin kind of expansion you started to see in the fourth quarter. Number two is I think we reduced headcount by approximately 50 people. As that occurred. And then number three is the transactions that we were processing for those branches represented the vast majority of the overall transactions, and therefore it helps us on the indirect costs become a lot more efficient within the organization and to implement some of the cost saves kind of following the branch disposition. That said, some of those things happened intra-quarter following the branch sale, where the people who were transferred with the branch got transferred on the day of the sale, so it was only a few days into the quarter, but some of the other things happened over the course of the following month, and even today we are working on our One Bank initiative where we're bringing together kind of the policies, procedures, and processes from all the organizations we've acquired over the last year or two under one kind of common and comprehensive set of policies and procedures. And so the efficiencies from that and some of the expenses from updating the systems to accommodate for that kind of are ongoing.
Okay. And were there any loan pool purchases or sales in the quarter? I know there were sales, but were there any purchases in the quarter?
No.
No purchases during the fourth quarter.
And then lastly, just to touch on taxes. So now that the DTA is fully reserved against, and on a go-forward basis, would it be correct to assume that I know that the valuation allowance will trend downward as you earn income, so would it be correct to assume that you'll have an effective tax rate of zero until the potential reversal of that valuation allowance?
No, I don't think zero is the right number. Ron can dig into the specifics, but it will offset a portion of our taxes in the future, but it's not a 100% offset.
So just to amplify that a little bit more, on the income statement, it'll of course bleed in through the effective tax rate, and there's a lot of moving pieces, not the least of which is the timing and recognition of the reversal of that deferred tax asset once the valuation is removed. The other thing is to consider is on the balance sheet, it is likely as future earnings are recognized, the reversal of the valuation allowance will happen all at once. So even though the reversal on the balance sheet would happen all at once, and we'll have the corresponding pickup in tangible book value, the income statement will be recognized on a more discrete and timely basis through the effective tax rate. But as Steve indicates, it won't be. It definitely will not be zero.
Are there other? Sorry, I'm just trying to wrap my mind around this. And obviously, every company is very different. And I know you have many different line items. The way that I've seen it from several companies is in the past is that it flows straight through, and then you do the reversal through the year end, and you continue to have a lower 0% tax rate. So is that's not the case here? Then you'll continue to
We will once the company decides to reverse out the valuation allowance, we will begin to recognize a lower tax rate. To exactly quantify that, what that rate will be is the difficult thing. You're asking us to try to predict into the future what the timing of the earnings and the timing of the reversal that's impossible to do at this point.
Okay. And then just lastly, and I'm not sure if you're able to answer this or not, but do you know when you intend to file the 10-K?
The filing date is due on Monday the 17th, and we anticipate filing it on time.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
Your next question comes as a follow-up from the line of Andrew Lash, representing Sandler O'Neill & Partners. Please proceed.
Hi, guys. I just want to follow up on Kevin's question. I mean, what is your ROA, ROE, and efficiency ratio target, and when do you think you can get there?
I think that the target requires us, it depends on when we get to our scale targets, which, our plan would set those in 12 to 24 months. So I think that's still a reasonable projection of when we'll reach kind of our goals, which would equate to approximately 5 years after the recapitalization of First Tech Trust, at which time I think we guided that we thought it would be a 5 to 7 year process to get where we targeted. As far as the metrics you're talking about, we've talked a little bit about you can, from an investor standpoint, you can measure things like efficiency ratio for some of our businesses, but some of the businesses that metric is tougher to measure against because it wasn't designed for things like an RIA business or even a retail broker business. I don't think we've provided guidance on it, and the reason is that we're looking to optimize our business as a whole and the profitability as a whole, and something like a bank-only metric like an efficiency ratio. Investors have asked, and we've provided some color as far as target efficiency ratios, and those tend to be against kind of some monoline peers, but monoline just meaning bank-only operations. To try and jam an efficiency ratio into kind of CS Financial's business or the Palisades Group's business is something that that we don't find particularly productive, because, you know, just to give you a sense, as an example, the revenues on the CS Financial business and the expenses that get incurred tend to be payments of fees on loans from borrowers that then get paid out to the brokers. And that tends to be, you know, pretty close to a 100% correlated expense where the margins aren't wide, but it facilitates the whole rest of our business and the loans that we book. And before we acquired CS Financial, that was just, in some instances, borrower-paid comp. And so it never went through the bank's balance sheet, but it was paid. And the broker got paid, and the economics of the transaction to us were very similar. Now that it becomes a retail channel that we control, we think that's a lot more valuable to us. But the efficiency ratio on paying that broker is, you know, close to 100%, 90 to 100%. And so the more jumbo loans we originate, the higher our efficiency ratio would go, just because of the nature of that business not fitting well into a single metric like efficiency ratio, because it's not a traditional metric. If we set up our business as a wholesale originator, our efficiency ratio from that business would go way down. Now, management's made the view that we'd rather control our origination channels from a quality perspective and a origination perspective, and we think that's a lot higher value business model and one that's really kind of builds customer relationships and serves our depositors. And so we've chosen to focus on retail origination and not wholesale. However, you know, if we stuck with a wholesale-only model, it would drop our efficiency ratio dramatically, even though all the financial parts of the transaction would be just about the same. So we don't find that particularly helpful. In fact, over the last several weeks, we've stopped originating jumbo loans through a wholesale channel. So when we took over the recapitalized bank in 2010, 100%, I think, of its single-family jumbo mortgages were originated through wholesale brokerage relationships. Today, we no longer do jumbo loans through that format. We think this gives us much better control of our credit quality. This is kind of how our highest-performing peers focus their business, and we take some comfort in that. And it's something that we think is a very value-added to us, because we get control of our business in all aspects. That being said, that decision, which I think helps our business, definitely adds a lot of variable expenses that will increase efficiency ratios, but have no material impact on profitability or potential profitability or ROA or ROE.
So in that case, how do you, or what metrics do you look at that analysts and investors can also look at to compare you to competitors?
So what we look at is our strategic plan, which takes the business as a whole and cites the question that Kevin asked, which is, what are we building here? And, you know, as we build it, what's the consolidated profitability we'd expect for that future business?
Is that
and,
an ROA or ROE?
You know,
consolidated profitability?
Sure. Yeah, sure. And I think we've given guidance before that when we do investments for based on ROE, you're looking at things that are in the high teens as a return hurdle. Even in our acquisitions, we've given guidance that we have return hurdles over 15% ROEs, and that's consistent with how we look at our business.
Gotcha. Thank you very much.
With no further questions at this time, I would now like to turn the call back to Mr. Steve Sugarman for any closing remarks.
Steve, this is Ron. If I may, I just want to go back to a question that was asked earlier, I believe, by Don Worthington on the TDRs. We have roughly approximately 13 million 26 loans that are in a TDR status. Of those 26, 25 are paying under their currently modified terms and are less than 90 days delinquent. Roughly about $12 million is paying according to those terms. So basically one loan down, roughly about $1 million.
All right. Well, we hope that you guys found this call productive, and we really appreciate you taking the time. Thanks again to all the employees and professionals at Bank of California. I think that we continue to make good progress towards our business plan. We look forward to reporting to you in a couple of months on the first quarter. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation in today's conference. This concludes the presentation. You may now disconnect. Good day.